All right. We have the right Zoom link again. 2 weeks in a row. I'm so happy.
Totally profesh. Totally
very,
profesh.
Very much. I get nervous these days. We have Marina, Robin, Margaret. Welcome, everybody. We're missing about three people. Hello. Hey, while we wait, why don't we kind of go around the room, Austin, and just I'm curious to see what the progress folks have made over the past week. So if you wouldn't mind either the chat or just unmute yourself and let us know what you worked on over the past week that you feel good about.
I can't really use chat because I have a arm pain.
Oh, no, that's fine.
This
is better. This is even better.
So it's even better because actually I think I want to really, when this is managed better, probably concentrate more on strategy offerings. So like after going through questions, session six, right? So like once I have the first offer that I'm comfortable with, and I've sold a couple, then I would want to transition to doing another strategy related offer. So instead of just being the hands, because the hands are not helping, I want to improve be able to do the sale, do an experience, client experience, and then sell a different one. So that's where I'm at.
Perfect. I love that you're actually using the hands and head metaphor here. Very appropriate for your situation today.
I mean, it's one of the reasons I think we're all interested in strategy work to begin with. Good writing can be very, very time consuming. And when you have like a change in season, some sort of change in physical ability, I got really sick last August. And I'd get up, take a shower, and be so tired that I would have to go back to bed before noon. And I'm like, thank God that I wasn't fully dependent upon 6, 7, 8 hours a day to like put in my writing work, you know? So ultimately thinking more about sustainability long term, you know, and my health has recovered, but it was just a reminder that, oh, you can't always just rely on having abundant energy and ample time, you know. So Ed, would you repeat the question for Patricia and David?
Yeah, so guys, we're just going around the room real quick, a minute or two. Since last week, you know, I challenged everyone to push themselves. Because I wanted you to not only challenge yourself, because I know you're fully capable, but also leading into our last call today, I wanted you to have something that you could come to us with that maybe was unexpected. So curious what you worked on, and just unmute yourself and let us know. Hey, Robin.
Hey. So I had sort of the opposite thing happened to me. I was wondering if this would work. I know it would work with the recreational boating side, and they always use the terminology, hey, can I pick your brain? So I know that. But with the work boat, you know, the big tugboats and all that, those other big boats, shipping and all that, I have no idea what to use. However, I've had two strategists now in that the shipping industry has hired. They've approached me to do some technical writing.
Great.
So, but I think it's weird. And one of them, so I know it works being a strategist for the industry. I just don't know the right terminology to use to go on my own and offer that services. But they don't understand how technical writers work either. So,
So two ideas. One, do you have any sort of project, content, or creative brief template that you use?
No.
So you remember, I think this, I've got one. I'll dig it up here in a second, and I'll just drop the link in the chat for everyone. But remember how we talked early on about you don't have to call it strategy. You can call it whatever you want, right? And I know Ed has a product where a big part of selling white papers is actually just the white paper planning session with the client. You could totally do the same for technical writing, right? Mm-hmm. So that facilitating that type of workshop or experience or session or whatever, like the deliverable could be the creative brief. But you would know secretly that you're also just trying to educate some of these strategists about here's how technical writing even works.
Right.
Right. So we all know that sometimes you have to gather information before you can even do good writing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't know how many times people have like, hey, we want you to do some writing for us. And then the deeper I get into the project, the more I realize they're totally disorganized. Right. Like, I now have to do a bunch of sort of remedial work to even get the materials that I need to then do the project I got hired for. So all that to say, one of the things that you could propose even to strategists is like, yes, I'd love to work with you on this technical writing with projects like this. Let's start with the creative brief. That's a one-time fee. It looks like this. And that way, we get all the information gathered. We have a single source of truth. I use that language a lot. Hey, let's make sure this project has a single source of truth. And that way we're all on the same page or same pages, as it were, right? So that's one idea. Second idea, if you've met a couple of strategists in the industry, I would go find their websites, find their LinkedIn profiles, and steal. No, let them inspire you, right? Let them inspire you. So what language are they using to communicate the value? Are they calling it strategy? And if probably so, like, not. So apparently, like, who knows, right? But get their names, go review all of their marketing materials that you can get your hands on. And then I don't ever recommend stealing, never plagiarize people's work, but use their stuff as a template, improvise on top of that. And then by the end, you'll kind of have something that has in a way already kind of been rubber stamped by the industry. So that's what I would do if I were in your shoes.
Okay. And while the first one called and we were having a conversation, I just kept hearing Ed's voice saying, you don't have to close them all. You don't have to close them all. Because she was so far out in left field. I mean, it was terrible. She was asking me questions. I was answering her. And I told her how long it would take to write the stuff. And now, mind you, they came to me because they found me and they told me I had all the experience they were looking for. Mm-hmm. And then she's like, well, I need the stuff within a week. I'm like, no, it doesn't work that way.
You also need a reality check, ma'am. That's how we say it in the South. When we're trying to be passive aggressive, we call, sir, excuse me, ma'am. You're disconnected from reality. Well, I mean, that's kind of your answer right there. Like, oh, right. And you could just say, hey, I totally understand your sense of urgency, but I've learned through experience, I can't do work I'm proud of mm-hmm. this with a project of this scope in a 7-day turnaround. I totally right. understand if you need to go a different direction.
Yeah. Well, I haven't heard so back from her, so I don't, the other one, but the other one I'm waiting, I should hear back today or tomorrow, whether or not I actually got the project. So
it's like, I would not be surprised if you don't hear back from her about this one. She might come back later.
Yeah. They're also looking to hire a CMO. So who knows what's going to happen?
Who knows? Right. But the last thing I'll say, with new relationships, coming to me with a really tight turnaround, the situations where I tied on my cape and tried to be a superhero and save the day mm-hmm. never results in a long-term relationship and yeah. actually enables poor planning on their side. Because most of the time I'm like, wait, you knew about this for months. You just didn't plan. And now you want me to save you. And
well, the other thing was that, you know, she told me I can't interview the people at the company that she's at to get the information that I need. So I have to use my own network. I'm like, well, my network is out on the ships. I don't know when they're going to get back to me.
So it sometimes you find someone who through their own ignorance and lack of experience just does not have realistic expectations.
Right.
Sometimes you find someone who has unrealistic expectations because this is like a personality flaw, you might say. So that's why I think always with my onboarding experience, I ask certain questions mm-hmm. to try to evaluate who I'm really dealing with. Every client, you have to train in how to be a good client for you. No matter how many freelancers they've worked with in the past, you have to train every client how to be a good client for you. So you're vetting them as much as they're vetting you. It sounds like you're like, yeah, I'm just not sure she'll be a great collaborator.
Right. But I think it's a great lesson for all of us for when we're offering strategy that we don't promise the world either, because who knows what she promised, because she's not going to get it from me. So
I like that, Robert. She's not going to get it from me. As she slips the knife out of its sheath, right? David, I think you had a question. And then Marina and Patricia, I haven't forgotten about you two.
Oh, thanks, Austin. Yeah, I had a couple in terms of pushing myself, and I don't know what's best to start with. I had the I finished my juicy offer, as well as per Ed's suggestion. I've been trying to ask deeper questions with new prospects. I don't know what you'd rather start with for my question.
Whichever feels more urgent for you.
Okay. If I had to pick one, it would be the juicy offer. I'd love to hear what you and what the group think about it.
Okay, cool. So let's put that in the queue.
Okay.
And then tell me kind of what you've been up to, just like 45 seconds, and then we'll come back. Well, I'll hit up Marina and Patricia and then come back to you.
Yeah. So what I've been doing is like when a new client comes to me, usually it's like order taking, what do you want? How long is the article? What kind of, and it's just like details. And I never really think about like, what are the results like? What have been past campaigns like? So I've been trying to ask those questions a bit more strategically. The prospect himself didn't know. He said like, oh, you're sounding like a bit like my boss asking these questions, but I know these people have liked these things in the past. That's why we're doing them. And I didn't want to push too hard at that point. So I don't know if that was good or bad. It was just a different outcome than what I'm used to, but he thought it was interesting that I was asking those questions.
Well, I think it's a compliment in a way. Because it actually reveals that he thinks you were doing high level thinking. You know, oh, my boss is normally the one doing the high level thinking and asking me questions like this. So I think that's a good early indicator that you were pushing him, forcing him to really think, right?
Right.
And I will say, and you may have already experienced this, it does get easier with time to not Definitely. Just be the order taker. And part of it is just like you develop that language set to redirect people. You know, how much do you charge for so-and-so? Oh, well, you know, the price depends on the scope. What would you like to see happen? Right?
That's a great follow-up question. Yeah.
Yeah. How long does it take? How soon can I get this piece of writing? Well, you know, let's talk about timeline in a moment. Tell me what level of planning you all have got and what you can share with me in terms of material to educate myself.
Okay.
Right. So it's like there are ways that you can keep nudging them back toward, hey, I need to know that all of my answers are kind of satisfied before I'm like effectively parachuting into a forest fire. Again, I don't want to be a hero. I'm not here to be a hero today. And it also kind of goes back to, we didn't really go into this in any of the six trainings, but because it's maybe a little bit too tactical, there have been times before I meet with a new prospect, and this comes from Sandler Sales. It's like a whole training methodology. I have mixed feelings about Sandler Sales, but one thing that I do like is what they call a pre-meeting contract, or a pre-meeting agreement. So before you hop on a discovery call, you can send an email and say, hey, I'm looking forward to talking to you this afternoon. I'm going to be asking these five or six or however many questions. Talk to you soon.
Yeah, I think that would have been, so then he wouldn't have been caught off guard. He would have maybe thought about it even a little bit. We could have gotten a bit deeper rather than, you know, I think he enjoyed the questions, but if I had prepped them even a little bit more, we would have gotten more out of them. So that's great advice. Yeah.
It depends. Like, I'm a verbal processor. So my wife and I were talking about this last night. She's an internal processor. I'm like, I don't know what I think until I say it. She's like, let me spend two or three days thinking about what I think, and then I'll share it next week, right? So I think some prospects really do need time to gather their thoughts if they're internal processors, right? Or even more introverted, you know? But think about in the future sending that sort of, it's called a pre-meeting contract, because you are basically saying, I'll be steering the conversation, and I'm going to be I'm going to get answers to these questions, right? So as they show up to the meeting, you've already set expectations that you're going to be spending the meeting answering your questions, and them not like grilling you or interviewing you or saying, how much do you charge, or that kind of crap, right? So that's just a tactic you can try. Before I forget, let me drop in this basic project brief. Oops. That's not it. Project brief template that I mentioned. You can obviously add as many other pieces to this as you want. If you wanted to go deeper into their like brand voice, tone, any sort of style guidelines they have, you can definitely add to this. But this will just give you an idea of like, yeah, here are all the project details that we need to have organized and clarified before I'll be able to give you any kind of, you know, accurate estimate around turnaround time. And you can get paid to create these, because I have worked with maybe one client out of 50 that has a creative brief to share. Like, they never have this, right? Let me see if I can, I'll actually pull up a completed one. And while I'm doing that, David, I haven't forgotten. We'll take a look at your juicy offer. Marina or Patricia, you know, tell us about progress over the last week. And you better have some, or Robin's going to pull her knife out of her sheath.
Okay, I'll go. I am working through spring break, which I don't love, but also is demonstrative. Demonstrates the commitment and the importance of this work that we're doing. And I wrote 4 crappy first drafts of juicy offers, and then polished one a little bit more that I would like to share today, if possible.
Cool. I'm sorry you're having to work through spring break, but well done. Okay. So we'll put you in the queue after David for talking through juicy offers. I'm going to drop in. I don't mind sharing this, because I'm pretty sure this startup is now defunct. So apparently the work we did together didn't do the trick, right? Now, actually, this campaign generated $700,000 in sales for them, which was super cool. But this will just show you, they came to us with really no coherent plan. I'm like, let's start with the project brief, right? It's not super long, but you're like, oh, cool. Now we actually kind of know what it is that we need to do, right? Okay, Patricia, what's on your mind?
So I bought a book.
It's a good one. I've heard of that one.
Ed, yes, Ed recommended it last week. So I haven't had a chance to read any of it, but I'm hoping to improve the questions that I ask on my road mapping. I made some tweaks to my road mapping. I sent it to a colleague to give me a little bit of feedback. And then I actually went through it with my sales coach yesterday, Nikki Roush. Ed, you know her. She gave me some tweaks. So that was great. And then I'm going to send it out. I sold a testimonial strategy. I have no idea what that is. I'm like,
oh, great.
So this woman, she called me and she said, because I've been really heavy on testimonials and I write testimonials for my clients. And she said, you have this testimonial offer. And I said, yes, I did. And then she said, well, I'd like you to write testimonials for me. But also, she said, I want to talk to you about getting a process for building testimonials and getting more testimonials on repeat kind of thing. And I'm like, I have a strategy for that. And so, so now I'm like, I don't know what I'm doing. So yes. So now talk about getting outside my comfort zone. I now have to come up with a testimonial strategy session that I don't really know what I'm doing. So she sent me a link. We're doing it.
Let me I'll just briefly describe mine. Right.
Okay.
And I'm, well, I've had 100% success rate at getting testimonials ever since I started doing this. So rather than ask someone to write a testimonial for me, which even if they're willing, people generally hate writing testimonials. It's like nobody's favorite thing to do. So that's why they pay you to do it. Right. And so instead, what I've started doing is, hey, would you take 5 minutes to answer some questions about our project? And they're like, sure. And let me see if I can find the form quickly. Marina, the book is called The Coaching Habit. And I actually, if y'all want to take a screenshot of this, these are the 7 questions that he goes into depth on. And I always keep them handy because most of my one-on-one coaching sessions use, Marina says one more time. Cool. Tell me when you're done. Give me a thumbs up.
Okay.
So yeah, that book was impactful for me because it's questions like, hey, what's on your mind? Which is what I just said to Patricia. Did you all pick up on that? It's straight out of The Coaching Habit. So that's super meta. Anyway, back to testimonials. So I start by saying, would you answer some questions about the project? And people are always, I think I do pretty good work and people are like, yeah, I'd be happy to. So let me, okay, here it is. I'll just drop, this is my email template too. You'll see how casual this is. And feel free to use this with your client. Pretend that this is your process, okay? Maybe it will be your process, right? Quick question for you. Would you be willing to answer a few questions about the project? If you're game, I'd like to turn your answers into a testimonial we can use and get your stamp of approval on that. I've never gotten to know. So then they answer the questions and get this. I write the testimonial for them based on their answers. It's in their voice using their phrasing. I will purposefully leave typos and stuff in there to make it seem less like a twice over English major wrote it. You know, and then I'll send it back to them. I've never had maybe one person is like, hey, will you tweak this slightly? And sometimes they're tweaking it to make it look more flattering to me, right? And then I have one other thing that I ask, and it could actually be, let's see, maybe I don't have it in here. But what I'll do is say, hey, last thing, would you mind copying and pasting that review or testimonial here? So some companies, they really want people to leave reviews on Facebook. Others, it's Google Maps, like the business's Google Maps listing. If it's, it could be somewhere else. Like if there's some, like I know a lot of attorneys, there are like websites where attorneys get rated. So one of their clients, they might ask their client to go leave that review on Rate This Attorney or whatever it's called, right? LinkedIn recommendations is a good one, right? Hey, would you mind going and pasting it in? So that's how I would address it, right? You could take the questions that are in my form, Patricia, and just say, here's some templates. Let's rewrite these together. But anyway, that's enough to get you started. If you help them nail down the steps in the process, nail down the questions to ask in the questionnaire, set up the Google form during the session. Why not? Okay. Write the email templates that they can use, and then go ahead and decide what they're going to do with the reviews and testimonials after they receive them. That should take up an hour or whatever. And they'll leave actually feeling like, wow, that was like a really effective use of my time. So,
Because I was also asked, because part of my testimonial offer to write them was the video, like offering them once we get the approved testimonial to record it for their video or for their YouTube or whatever they use it. Is that something? Also, I like the idea of where do you want it to go? Do you want it to go to LinkedIn? Wanted to go to Google, like that's really helpful.
So it's a multi-step process, and because each step only takes 5 minutes, it actually feels like less of a burden to people on the client side, right? And I would recommend that all of you, whether it's for copywriting projects or for strategy projects, employ a very similar process for soliciting testimonials from your clients. Like I said, I don't get turned down anymore. And people don't procrastinate anymore because it really only takes them 5 minutes and then I write it. So I've gotten more testimonials since I started asking clients to fill out a questionnaire rather than write it themselves. Okay.
Thank you. That's awesome.
You're welcome. All right, David, why don't you drop your offer in the chat if you can. A link or wherever you have it. And then Ed and I will like tag team that quickly. And then we'll do, was it you, Marina? You said that you had one too. Then we'll do Marina's as well.
Is it okay if I go ahead and share my screen? Because it's a Word doc.
That's fine.
Okay. There you are. You can see it.
All right. So when the next market bubble bursts or bank collapses, people urgently seek the guidance of a true financial expert, the kind working at your firm. Are you getting the word out? You and your team have the knowledge. The only problem is figuring out where to begin. Suddenly 6 months have gone by and you've published nothing. All those hot thought leadership ideas from your experts have gone stale and you've left an empty microphone for the competition to speak up. If you don't have time to come up with ideas or you have hit a mental block, my thought leadership brainstorming session can help you break through. After a 90-minute call, we'll develop 24 high-quality article topics for the upcoming year, the kinds that show up in media publications. Like, won't read those. Who I write for every month. I love that little social proof, little flex there. As a financial writer with 10 years experience, love it. Layering in the proof. I know what topics stand out and build credibility with potential clients. I'm a former financial advisor who passed. I did not know that. Congrats. Those are no joke. I'm a former financial advisor who passed the CFP and Series 6 exams. and ultimately flamed out of the industry because he thinks it's all a pile of crap. No, your experts can trust. I know what they're talking about and won't waste time explaining technical details to me. Very good. For $14.75, you'll have your entire year of thought leadership articles figured out along with outlines for the first couple so you can hit the ground running. All in all, terrific job. All of my suggestions are more sort of cosmetic. First and foremost, I think with any piece of writing these days, lead with a hook, lead with the lead. And in this case, I would say, if you don't have time to come up with ideas, that sentence, I think that's going to grab attention rather than the relatively negative sentence that does diagnose the risk or the problem. But I would actually lead with the hook first. Then, you know, you can set up the problem. Then you can agitate the problem and then talk about the solution. It's like a classic copywriting template, pain, agitate, solve, which always bugged me because it's not parallel construction. But anyway, so if you think about it, pain, agitate, solve, right? So that's the first big thing. Have a hook, maybe restructure based on that pain, agitate, solve template. And then I would take your process and probably bullet point it. So add your process in here. Hey, we meet for 45 minutes. I pull your ideas out of you, you know, three, four, five steps total, but I would just add those bullet points, right? I at the bottom, or not even at the bottom, if you write for, you know, AARP, Forbes, Advisor, Kiplinger, link out to your sort of contributor profiles on those sites, okay, right? Drop a few testimonials underneath if you've got them, you know. I like, especially if they reinforce the points that you've made. I love that David himself is a subject matter expert. And because of his background in the financial advisory world, you know, we don't ever get beginner level content from him. We only ever get expert level content from him, like reinforce, right? So you've already done a really good job with proof. Can you add a couple of testimonials, that sort of thing? And remember, it don't have to be proof of results yet if you've not done this type of engagement before. It may actually be more proof of capability, right? But all in all, I think you did a terrific job here. I'll say one more thing before I pass the baton to Ed. I think one little way that you could bring clarity is to speak directly to your audience. So are we talking to like the managing partner at a financial advising firm? Are we talking to a marketing manager at a firm? Like who is the target audience here? Speak to them directly in that hook. Hey, as a marketing, you know, hey, if you're the managing partner at a financial advising firm, I get that you may not have time to come up with great content ideas or great thought leadership ideas, right? So that I think gives people a sense of orientation. You've spoken directly to them. You've called out a problem that they have. Now they're paying attention. So just make sure you build precisely the target audience into the hook. Ed, what would you add?
Man, I kept thinking about all the things that I had. You covered all of them.
I feel very smug then.
I think that this is solid, and I agree 100% with everything you suggested.
Maybe give it a unique name, right?
Okay.
You know, like killer thought leadership ideas for financial advisors. You know, thought leadership for financial advisors, right? Effective thought leadership for, so name it.
I would actually come up with something kind of physical sounding, like, you know, because these people have this stuff in their head that just don't know how to take it out. Like the you know, the idea extractor, kind of, you know, that kind of concept or angle.
Idea gut punch. No.
Like, we're going to get, I'm an expert at getting your best stuff out of your head.
Yeah.
That is one of my strongest skill sets.
Awesome.
You know, a lot of these people, they really wish they had somebody like that. Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. Now, thank you both. I got the ideas brewing. This has been really helpful. Thank you.
And I will say, if you haven't already, Ed and I put together a real life examples doc. So it's got other people's strategy offers, should be in your portal. There's a guy named Nick Huber. Now, he's in the financial industry, but even he was in the last cohort. And even before we had finished a cohort, he had been able to sell a couple of these workshops. So sometimes calling something a workshop adds to the perceived value of it. But I think I think his prices are in there. I want to say he was charging like $3,000. So you could have multiple levels of involvement and multiple price points for this same, right? If you were to do a little bit of competitive analysis, a little more research, if you were to dig into their analytics and say, hey, these historically, these topics have performed the best for you, right? Could you interview some of their subject matter experts? Now that you've got a really strong baseline, you could figure out other ways to make this offer richer and more expensive. So, but again, terrific work with this.
Great. Thank you so much, Austin and Ed.
You're welcome. Marina, time for the pummeling to begin. You're muted.
I pulled the link from my Word doc, but it didn't come through as a link. Why is it not coming through as a link? One second. Oh, copy. Okay, there we go. There we go.
Cool.
All right. Just to explain very briefly, it feels very verbose to me, and I don't love the name. I want like a punchier name, but this is a crappy second draft.
Okay, I'm going to screen share so that, sure. Let's see, share screen, boom. All right, and so I'll say this about verbose, right? I don't think that more information about an offer is a bad thing. Because even when you think about some like classic long form sales letters, depending on your target audience, more information may be better. So It may be more about restructuring so that you get to the point quickly. Kind of the advice we gave to David, hook first, then bold promise, key outcomes, right? And then price. And then maybe you go into like, here's some industry risks and that sort of thing. So it may just be, you may have great content, but just want to restructure it a little bit. Okay. Scientific communications platform sprint. Because yours is longer, I'm not going to read through everything.
Sure.
So let me say, first of all, that I think the doc is really well formatted. And then I would right out of the gate, move, you know, that pain, agitate, solve format that I mentioned.
Yeah.
So if you have the hook, right, you might want to start by further highlighting the problem. And you've already done such a good job delineating the sort of symptoms, right? So you might just want to move those up. Like pain, agitate, solve, or I should say hook, right? So I would say, asking you this question, what is there a single big pain point when scientific communication is ineffective? Like, how do they actually know to diagnose their own problem?
Yeah, that's a good question. I can't think of a single pain point, but I would think that inaccurately communicating your science, whether it's a drug, a device, something else like that, will be detrimental to the end user, which is often patients and people and their health. So that's like the big overarching reason why you would want to make sure that you're accurately communicating science and medical innovation. But then also from the business perspective, if no one understands it, you can't fund it, people won't buy it, you can't advance your organization.
So that's that right there. That's it.
Okay.
If no one understands it, people won't buy it, you won't get the funding. You're making all this impact behind the scenes, but that's just not coming through clearly. Right. So that's sort of like, maybe your hook is less about your bold promise. And it really is more about like, try to like, you know, and like sort of epic literature. There's that concept of in medias res, like get straight to the action. You know, so like good stories, there's not a whole lot of buildup that's like, take me straight into like some kind of battle in the case of like the Iliad or the Odyssey, right? So maybe in your case here, you say, hey, if you're not communicating, like, you know, maybe it's something like scientists have a problem or scientific companies have a problem. You're doing all this great work, you're innovating. Maybe you're like, you're doing research and creating technology and creating new whatever medicine, pharmaceutical, whatever. And it's like, it could change the lives of thousands or millions, but are people confused? Is that message getting through clearly, right? And then you talk about, wouldn't you love to, or wouldn't you like everyone, kind of like what you talked about here, wouldn't you like everyone in your company, regardless of their level of technical training or expertise, to be able to succinctly explain what your company does, how you're different, why customers should care, or why patients should care, or whatever, right? So, so then you could say, but you know, you like, here's how to know if your stuff could be more effective. You know, you do get conflicting messages from different people with varying levels of expertise. No one's on the same page, blah, blah, blah. Right. And then you could introduce your solution to just say like, hey, we'll do a sprint. And by the end of the sprint, here's what you're going to have, right? So I take back what I said earlier. You may have the hook that just speaks to like the root problem. Then you talk about the risks of that, where you're like, people aren't going to buy your stuff if they don't understand. People can't get excited if they're confused. Then you exacerbate the problem. Then you talk about your solution at a high level with your bold promise. Then you go into your actual process, right? And you can layer proof throughout, you know, this is what I've experienced in my X number of years being an expert in scientific communication, blah, blah, blah. So like I said, at the very beginning, like you've got some incredible stuff in here, like you've already layered in. I don't think you're very far away. I just think you move some things around. And then last thing before I pass the baton to Ed, I would read this aloud. And I would make this as plain spoken seventh grade as possible, and maybe toss in a few stories. Right? It's like, have you ever watched a commercial for a new medicine or pharmaceutical, and by the end of the commercial, you're still not sure like what the drug does, or it's some sort of scientific breakthrough, but it takes them 30 minutes to explain? Like, can you add humor? Can you tell a story? Can you share a personal anecdote? Right. So that, in other words, if you are going to go for length, you may as well sort of reach for your entire toolkit of what would make your messaging effective with metaphorical language, narrative, storytelling, right? And never be afraid to drop in a few industry statistics too. Like, it was back during the Obama administration, I think, when there was some report that came out that like the language on various government websites was like nearly impossible for most people to decipher. So could you find any sort of industry research or statistics that talks about how most scientific communication is so opaque that it's completely ineffective? Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. And I'm doing more B2B here, but I understand what you're saying.
Right. It wouldn't be B2C. It's like typically experts talking to experts. Mm-hmm. So that may be a really bad example, but
I got you. I understand what you're saying, though.
Ed, thoughts?
I have one idea for everybody. I'm going to walk you through how I craft copy like this, especially when I feel like, oh my gosh, what I just created is way too long and I know it. Okay. First of all, you should see it as the brain dump. It's like, I have to get it out of my head. So feel good about that. But then what I do, this sounds a little weird. I go out on a walk and I take my phone with me and I use the voice memo feature. And I now pretend with no notes or anything that I am having a conversation over coffee with a good friend who happens to be part of that audience. You know, somebody I've worked with before, whatever. And I'm not trying to sell him or anything. I'm just, he asked me, so tell me, Ed, how do you help clients with this? He just wants to know. He's curious. Mm-hmm. There's no weirdness because I'm not trying to sell anything. And I just, in the plainest language that I can imagine while out for a walk, just start talking it through. So, you know, Jim, how, you know, most of the time this stuff that we're putting together is just so verbose and so complex and all over the place and this, that, and the other, right? And yes. I frame it as a question. Yeah. All right. Well, here's the problem and here's what I do. And I just talk it through and I'm recording myself doing this and it's kind of all over the place, but what it forces me to do is I get out of my room, my office, I'm out somewhere else. I'm automatically more creative and I'm talking to a friend and it's just simpler. And I am shocked at how much I'm able to net out the whole copy just by doing that. I've written whole sales letters, promotional copy, all kinds of articles that I couldn't seem to kind of get them to gel just because, but I have to take that first step. It's got to be ugly and it's got to be a lot and it's got to be all over the place. And then now that I've got that out, then I go do that. The other thing I've done instead of for a walk, I'll go out in my patio with my checklist of points that I have to cover, like the, you know, the juicy offer elements. And I just kind of talk through them in plain language one by one. So that's another way you could do it. But I'm telling you, give it a try, guys, because there's one thing when you sit at your desk in front of the keyboard, the pressure is so high, it's never going to be your best. Okay. So you got to get out of your element to fool your inner critic into thinking, oh, this is no big deal. I'm just playing around here. And then the inner critic kind of calms down.
That's so good. Kind of in that vein, if I find myself getting locked up when I'm typing on my computer, I find handwriting sometimes because it's slower helps. But Ed, I think that idea is like pure gold, right? And I've seen how that's come through in some of your copywriting. It's like, hey, listen, I've been there too. You know, if you have this problem, you know, it's because you're in business and this is what happens in business. But you have to ask yourself, how motivated am I right now to change my situation? And if you're motivated right now to change your situation, I've got something for you, right? Like, There's no hard sell there. And that's one of the reasons I actually love Ed's copywriting. So now, Ed, we know all your secrets. You shared all your
secrets. Go on walks. There you go.
We've got about 10 more minutes. Marina, do you have something that you can go on to just go ahead and stick a fork in this thing?
Yes, this was great. Thank you. The last question I would say is, I just noticed that, I don't know if anyone else had this issue, differentiating between value and outcomes in writing the offer. And maybe it's a little bit blurry and we don't need to, you know, have that clear differentiation, but I don't know if you had anything to say about that.
So this has actually come up before. It won't surprise you. And I think Ed was the one who put it this way. Outcomes, what am I getting for my money? Value, how much is that worth? Or what's that worth is probably the better
way to clear.
What I did, Austin, is not only did I say that, but I said I've actually turned it into one item. I call it value-based outcome. And that, just by packaging it like that, I find it easier to remember. That way, notice value-based outcome, the emphasis is on the outcome. But then it reminds me that it's got to be value-based. There's got to be value language, implied or direct.
So one thing that I know is in the Juicy Offers worksheet that, I mean, the value piece of that whole framework is always the hardest one for us, right? It's different if you're a sales consultant and you're like, oh, like, let me help you improve, you know, we'll get you more leads, improve your close rate. You're going to sell higher value projects and we're going to double your sales. So how much is a lead worth to you right now? Great. We're going to double that. And then you can anchor your price against that potential return on investment, right? But we're not sales consultants. And so it's harder if there's not like this monetary value to anchor against, but you've got to remember things like clarity around what their best ideas are, confidence in this new scientific messaging, right? Excitement about moving forward with these 12 ideas that David helped us come up with. So a lot of the emotional benefits, don't underestimate those. Those are going to be I actually think people who focus exclusively on ROI and don't, and like kind of miss the emotional resonance of some of the work that we do, are really sort of shortchanging themselves. So don't freak out, right? You know, and Robin said something above, like, you know, moving people toward FDA approval more quickly, like that would be a key outcome that is incredibly valuable because it's very costly when, you know, you're trying to get FDA approval and you're finally up for it. And then oops, some of your messaging was off, right? So yeah, the value will change from industry to industry based on your niche, but with those value-based outcomes that Ed was talking about, don't underestimate, like, hey, it feels great to have clarity and momentum. I'm so relieved to have an actionable plan and I need to like get closer to my goals, that sort of thing. Okay, David dropped in a question. Best title for LinkedIn: financial content writer and strategist, financial content, like, so those various iterations. What I would do is go look around, find some people who you would consider direct competitors, look at what they're doing, and then try not to get too cute or coy or precious. Actually try to put in your title whichever title you think is most searchable in terms of a keyword that a potential client could put in to find you. Like, there's a friend of mine who's a very gifted writer who in her LinkedIn title was calling herself a creative storyteller. And I'm like, no one's going to find her because no one is like, you know what? I really need to hire a creative storyteller, right? I really need to hire a word wizard. No one's searching for a word wizard, right? So what are your potential clients searching for on LinkedIn? Do some keyword research and then stick it in, right? And you could also, if you want to do some second order research to see, well, how does LinkedIn treat keywords that are in the about section or maybe in past work experience? So don't be afraid to sprinkle keywords strategically throughout your profile. It's just like SEO in like on Google, right? All right. Marina, do you have a template or suggested way to take notes, organize notes for the sessions that we facilitate? So typically, I like to think about what report I'm going to deliver afterward and already have that framework or structure in place. And then once I have that framework or structure, I'm like, hey, here's what I'm going to deliver to them. Then I would take my individual questions and say, where will this go? Like, when would I ask this? Right. And then I'm actually using my report template to take notes. Right. So, for example, if you're doing like a scientific communication workshop and the first piece of the workshop is more diagnostic, and you're like, how is your current communication ineffective, right? If that's the first question that you plan to ask in the session, just go ahead and put your notes there so that you're basically building the report during the session as you take notes. And there's not a bunch of reordering you have to do after the fact. It's not a bad idea to record these sessions, right? So that you can use something like Temi, TEMI.com. To later transcribe, right? And so that's one way that I'll sometimes, because people are talking so fast, record a little bit of shorthand, like an unusual word choice or whatever, as a note to myself, to then go back to the transcription, do a quick word search in the transcription, find that particular piece of our conversation, pull in the full context for the report. Does that help, Marina?
Yeah. And I was also thinking, because you suggested take the notes by hand, how to make sure that you're organizing things appropriately as you're taking them by hand.
So I'll often have my questions printed out. If I did a kickoff session before the workshop where we agree on the agenda for the workshop together, I might have my agenda printed out. Maybe I'm a little bit old fashioned because I still like to have things printed out, but I've just found it's less disruptive to have a printout than to constantly be going back to my computer screen. So agenda, if there is one, in lieu of an agenda, whatever I'm going to be delivering in my report is effectively the agenda. All the questions that I plan to out organized according to the sequence I want the workshop to have. And then, you know, whatever you use for note taking. So, but I think it's a very personal thing, right? However you feel like you will be most effective at taking notes, do that. And then if it's not effective for that first workshop, do it differently next time. Last thing on those, if you agreed to something in the scope for a strategy session and you get to the end of your workshop and you have a sick feeling because you feel like you didn't use your time well, book a 30-minute follow-up session on Zoom. Say, hey, I really want, you know, I just noticed I need a little bit more detail from you on X, Y, and Z. So be generous with the first ones as you start to dial in your process. All right. If you have Google Business Standard, you can record your Google Meet meetings and you can also transcribe the meetings. It's awesome. They're like otter.ai, you can loop into Zoom. There's another one, I think, called not Fathom. Maybe it's Fathom. But yeah, it's really cool now. like how you can automate a lot of the transcription stuff. We are kind of at time. What a journey. Ed, take us home, man.
Yeah, I look, there's you guys just need to don't get overwhelmed, okay? If you're feeling like, oh my gosh, there's so much here, I think I need to go back through everything. I think there's some value there, but I would urge you to just push yourself. I mean, some of you are already offering this stuff, selling some of these. It's going to look very different than what you thought it would look like. It's going to be messy. It's not going to be like, I always thought, oh, it's going to be like the skies are going to part and I'm going to land this $3,000, you know, strategy engagement. It's probably not going to look that way. It's probably going to be like this $500, $1,000 kind of messy thing that you now have to rush home and figure out how to put together. Like Patricia said, right? It's going to feel that way. And then because you're going to work hard to put it together, it's not going to feel like success, but that is success. Okay. It's going to be messy. And that's how you learn. You're not going to learn necessarily by going through everything again, even though we encourage you to come back to this material. You're going to learn out there and you're going to make mistakes. And that's totally cool. Accept them. It's not the end of the world. You know, you haven't lost it. You haven't lost any future opportunities with that client. So I would say, once we end here today, I would encourage you to write down real big on your notebook what your next action item is. Not a project, like a task, okay? Something that you know, if I do this, this is going to get me moving, and this is something I can do and complete. It's not a series of tasks. It's one thing. And I would give yourself a deadline. It should be something you can do, you know, by this time next week, and commit to it like your life depends on it. That would be my biggest thing. It's not, you don't lack knowledge. Right now, you lack implementation discipline, and it starts by one action item.
The very next thing. I dropped a direct quote into the chat. There was a guy who's interested in a strategy engagement with me, and I sent him all the details. And he said, and I quote, "Thanks, Austin. I'm sure you can provide good advice, but that fee is significantly higher than I expected. So I'll pass." Okay, on to the next one. You know, like, so I just want you all to know, I still get a lot of no's. There are people who think my prices are too high. There are people who, even when they respond, it's terse and there's just a total lack of warmth. This didn't hurt my feelings. I'm like, well, I see the value. Other people have seen the value. He doesn't see the value. Okay. So just, you know, manage your mindset along the way. If someone says no or tells you your price is too high or whatever, you say, you know, my response was, I'll give you my response too. It really helps to know what you're going to say. This is my response. Roger that. Here's a 14-minute podcast episode about the way I think about goals. Maybe it will be of some use to you as you do your strategic planning for Q2. All the best, Austin. And I'm out. And I'm not going to beg him. I'm not going to come down to my price. And I guarantee this guy is going to circle back around at some point in time. Right? So when you get no's, that's part of the journey. Manage your mindset. No is a good thing because it means you took a risk and you put yourself out there.
Totally. One last thing, guys. Let us know. Let us know when you land that first one.
Please. Yes.
Doesn't really matter for how much. Just we'd love to hear from you. So we're cheering you on, and we wish you the very best. I know you're going to do very well.
All right.
Thanks so much.
Peace.
Bye, everyone.
Peace out. Bye, everybody.
Bye.